Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network. With Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power,
fueling the mischief in the beautiful game.
Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
Now then, very happy to say Mark Lawrenson joins us. Evening, Mark.
Evening.
Last time I saw you, you were on Football Focus telling everybody what you would do with a GoPro if you had one, which was quite the moment.
Yeah, I've had a few comments.
I'll bet. So the Liverpool situation continues. Last 10 games, Liverpool are 15th in the table when it comes to form, 3 defeats in a row. I'm going to play you some audio, first of all. It's even, you know, so bad it leads to rumours, and I know rumours are easily created, but there were rumours Jurgen Klopp might be on the cusp of resignation. And obviously, he's had such a horrible week. You can only imagine what it must be like to have to miss your own mother's funeral, horrific. So your heart goes out to him. But Klopp was addressing, you know, this sense that he might be on the wane somehow or burnt out. Have a listen.
Jurgen, there's been a lot of support for you from fans over the last 48 hours. The banner at the Kop, for example. What do you make of that, the outpouring from Liverpool fans for you? And were you aware that there was rumours saying that you might leave on Saturday?
So I heard about both. So yeah, the banner is nice, obviously not necessary. I don't think so. I don't feel that I need special support in a moment or whatever, but it's nice, very nice. And what was the other thing that I could leave? Would
yeah,
leave?
rumors circulating. And
what was the rumors about?
Oh, so I've signed Paul on to mute. The rumors were that you were leaving or taking a break.
Okay, neither nor. I don't need a break. So I heard as well about that. Look, the last thing I want to do is talking about private things in a press conference. But everybody knows, yes, privately we had an absolute tougher time. But that is not only for now 3 weeks ago or whatever. That was a longer, much longer time already. So, and we always deal with it as a family, 100%. And when I came here to the football club to work, I'm 53. I work in football since 30 years, as a coach since 20 years. I can split things. I can switch off one thing and the other thing, and I don't carry things around. If I'm private. If I'm in football, at a workplace, and I'm here. Of course, we are influenced by things that happen around, but nobody has to worry about me or whatever. I'm honestly, I might not look like this because the weather is not cool and I'm white and the gray gets, the beard gets more and more gray, all these kind of things. Yes, I don't sleep a lot, that's all true, and my eyes look like that's all fine, but I'm full of energy. Honestly, the situation is a challenge. I see it more as an no, I don't want to have the situation, but now we are in, and now I see it as a challenge, an interesting challenge. So I cannot ask a lot of people, nobody wrote a book about, again, how did you come in a situation like that and how do you sort it? But we will sort it.
Mark, I have to say, I think that's a pretty convincing dismissal of those rumours.
Yeah, there was also, I don't know whether you heard this one, that Robertson and Alisson had a bit of a fisticuffs in the dressing room, which also was a complete horlicks. I spoke to someone this morning, one of the journos that's covered the club for years and years and years, and obviously he gets loads of stuff, and he just started laughing. He said, oh my God, he said, since Trump came out with fake news, he said, that's all we get nowadays.
Yeah, I guess it's easy to make up rumours.
Yeah.
The goals conceded against Leicester were pretty dreadful.
Well, listen, so at 1-0, obviously, and they were playing, they were decent. I think Leicester just only had the one real chance, I suppose, when Vardy hit the crossbar. I thought they were in control of the game. And all right, obviously, you know, Leicester score from the free kick first that was disallowed and then wasn't, so you've got to live with that. Now, the second goal is the one that absolutely does them in, because Alisson doesn't have to come. There's no way, rhyme or reason, you have to come 35, 40 yards out of your goal when Kabak was looking to try and deal with it. I feel a bit sorry for Kabak because ball's kind of coming behind him. He's gone to go and rectify the situation. Next thing is, it's like rabbit in the headlines. You've got the goalkeeper running at him and he's 6'5". You're thinking, what the hell? So, and then the third goal, obviously, Salah gave the ball away. But that's when you're not playing particularly well. That's what happens. But I thought, actually, and I don't need to defend Liverpool at all because it is a bad spell, but I thought, generally, they'd look much better than Leicester through the course of the game. And, man, that's the goalkeeper twice in two games. And, look, he's been absolutely brilliant for them. He was a major reason why they won the league last year. And at the moment, he's having a mad couple of weeks. But I think the way what they will do with him is let him play through. I think that's the only thing you can do. And when somebody's world class, it doesn't take them too long before they show that they're world class again.
The thing which jumped out to me about that second goal was Klopp afterwards saying he didn't even hear Alisson shout. And he would have heard, obviously, given the stadium is empty. I mean, it's one thing coming out. It's another thing not to shout when you're coming out.
Well, yeah, there's also, there's that. I mean, the thing is, does Kabak speak any English? He's of Turkish extract, isn't he, and played in Germany. So I don't even know if he talks any English. I don't know whether that came in to the situation. But listen, if Alisson just stays in goal and lets Kabak try and deal with the situation, and then if he fails and Vardy or whoever's free on goal, you've still got a chance of the goalkeeper saving it. And I just think at the moment, basically, when he should stick the goalkeeper, he comes out, and when he comes out, he sticks, and that's just that split-second thing in your mind. And I think also, and I know a little bit about this, which is that, you know, if you are such a good player, I think that when you make a couple of mistakes in the game, the next game, all you really want to do is just rectify that whole thing, just saying, oh, well, it was obviously a one-off. And I had a little one in the first half where Vardy was almost through, and I don't think he should have come out then, and he wouldn't have got anywhere near it. But I think he was just then, his state of mind is, I need to solve this. I need to solve this situation. And that split second, do I go, do I stay? And he's just come rampaging out of his area. So it's a little bit of a worry, but it's just something they're going to have to deal with.
Mm. Interested for your thoughts on the third goal, because Thiago and Kabak again conspired between them to just leave Harvey Barnes go. Now, certainly in Match of the Day, they really pointed the finger at Thiago. They kind of said, look, he never hands him off. He just kind of drifts out, and it's not like he hands him over to Kabak in any vociferous way. And it's just a worrying thing for him to have done, because it just shows a lack of kind of alertness to danger.
Absolutely, and he'd been on long enough, so it shouldn't have been an issue. But that's the problem with all of them at the moment, that they're all making these mistakes. And I wouldn't call them being superhuman before, but they were certainly at the very, very top of the game. But they've now all started making mistakes. I mentioned in the past when Salah gave the ball away. I felt sorry for the centre-back. He's been chucked in. He obviously played with Henderson, which was absolutely fine. But it's his first game. He's got to play against Vardy, which is extremely difficult for anybody at the top of the game anyway. I just hope that doesn't send him back, you know, thinking, oh, my goodness, is that what this is all about? So he'll need looking after as well. Look, you know, in every position at the moment, they're just making mistakes. I mean, even at the weekend again with, I think, Robertson probably got forward a bit more than he has done of late. His crossing wasn't particularly good at all. Trent looked ordinary against someone who attacks him, which he's now done for quite a few weeks. So he can kind of point the finger at lots of the players. But I'll reiterate the fact that they really were in control of that game. I mean, privately, if you'd ask Brendan Rodgers, he's probably thinking we could get done two or three here.
Mm. And on Kabak, so, you know, Turkish central defender, 21 years of age, they've signed him for $1 million initially, and they have the option to buy him for what could be €26 million down the line. Away from the mistakes, general impressions?
I think think he was fine. He was comfortable, and you know, he's also, you know, don't forget, he's not playing with an experienced centre back, someone who can talk him through. He's playing with Henderson, who obviously wants to play in midfield. So I do think with him, I mean, my heart went out for him, because I think, you know, if he's alongside even Matip, say, let alone Van Dijk and Gomez, I think he skates through it. And it was just a difficult. It's a difficult start for him. But everybody tells me that seeing him play in Germany that he's going to be a proper player. So you know, people who I respect, I would have to take their impression rather than just for seeing him for what 90 minutes plus.
Yeah, there is of course one way Liverpool can salvage this season. That's the Champions League. So Leipzig away first leg in Budapest. We saw them at Old Trafford. They lost 5-0. They did make the semis last year. They conceded a lot of goals. So they've conceded 12 in 6 thus far in the Champions League. That is the highest tally of any team in the knockout stages. They're a pressing team. I mean, it's kind of hard to predict anything from Liverpool right now. How do you see this?
Oh, absolutely. It's impossible. So I would think Klopp will be saying to them, you know, just remember Saturday until obviously conceded the second goal. He said because generally, but the destination of the game was always going to be in Liverpool's way until, of course, they came up with the mistake. So I think he'd be looking for more of that. I don't particularly know what he can do with the team. That's a difficult one. I don't know. I don't even know if. Do you know if Fabinho's travelled? Do we know that?
We don't know if he's travelled. He's certainly a doubt still, though.
Yeah, doubt still. So. Look, so, you know, I don't know who's going to play at centre-back, but I just feel, and I said this last week, which is that, you know, generally the strength of the team at the moment is the three boys going forward, the three strikers. I think there's no doubt about that whatsoever. So let's make midfield as strong as we possibly can. If that means chucking Henderson back in there and playing someone else at the back, let's just go and do it, because the team's conceding goals anyway, regardless of who's playing in there. But let's look at it a different way, and let's try and outscore the opposition. I think that, at the moment, is probably Liverpool's best way of doing it, because, as we know, they need a win, and if they get a 4-3 win, they will absolutely slap your hand off for it.
Yeah. So get Henderson back in there, because, as you say, they're not conceding anyway. So what's he bringing to the party, for instance, that Thiago isn't quite able to bring, it seems?
I think legs is the first thing, because we've got him in there, and you've got Wijnaldum, and you know, because they are very, very protective in terms of the back four. That's the first job they do, but also they cover some ground, and I mean, what they do is they pen teams in. You know, the front three go and they push on, they press, and then the midfield players press as well, and they make it really difficult for teams to get out. And if you watch Liverpool at the best, when you watch the opposition midfield players, when they get the ball, they do not get a split second to get their head up and look where to pass it forward, because Liverpool are on to them. So that would be the major thing for me. And listen, I'm a Thiago fan. I don't think he's got the legs to get up and down all the time. But if you stick him in a position where, you know, he's central to everything and doesn't have to cover too much ground, his passing is brilliant. All right, didn't play particularly well on Saturday. Well, you can name a few who were exactly the same, but I think he's very much a plus. And I think Kate is very close to getting back, isn't he? I think Diogo Jota as well can't be far away. So just that whole competition for places every single where, apart obviously from central defence. But, I mean, I did a thing for the club on the Friday, and somebody said to me, what do you think the team will be tomorrow? And I had Phillips in it. I had Phillips in it just because he's been the most consistent of all the centre-backs they've had, you know, including Fabinho. Every time Phillips has come in, he's done really, really well. So I was quite surprised that Quebec actually started, and I just thought it was a really dangerous game, especially with Vardy, because we know what he's like, and also Maddison is such a clever player, and Harvey Barnes, of course. You just kind of think maybe put him on the bench and let him have another look at it, but look, he's gone. It doesn't really make any difference now.
Mark, do you sense Klopp has been frustrated with the club in terms of how they've handled the Van Dijk situation, the injury?
In what way do you mean?
didn't go out and put their money where their mouth was and really back him in the transfer window, get a big name in, go for broke and give him a great chance at the next 5 months?
I don't think that's been a major problem with him whatsoever, because he's always waited for players anyway. And we know it's just been so, the lad's just going to Bayern Munich, hasn't he? I can't remember the name. He's signed. Do you know who I mean?
No.
He signed a pre-contract with Munich and he goes in the summer and everyone's been looking at him, including Liverpool and stuff, but he was never going to leave in January. So what I'm trying to say is to actually get somebody in January, because don't forget, you want a ready-made central defender and yes. You want a top-class central defender. They're not about in January unless you pay absolute fortunes.
Shouldn't they have broken the bank?
Hindsight. I think we had this conversation, I think, a while ago, and I just didn't think they would go and buy somebody for zillions, because I just didn't think that was their way. But also, there's one thing about Klopp, and he's been proven right in this, and even Van Dijk, 75 million, and we all rolled our eyes and thought, whoa, he's probably paid 25 million quid too much. Well, he hadn't, had he? So he knows his players and he knows what he wants. And we know that, head of recruitment, Michael Edwards, has done brilliant for them so far. And I just imagine there wasn't anybody around there that they thought would be value for money and be good enough to get in their team, basically.
Yeah. To be fair, I'm basing the question on not very much his disposition in interviews as much as anything. But to be fair, I mean, he was spiky when they lost to City at the end of last season with Jeff Shreves, and things were going swimmingly then. So you can overread it into his crankiness at the moment. It can be as simple as, well, we're losing.
Well, yeah, but also, listen, you can't go to his mother's funeral.
I'm talking the last 2-3 months, like even, they play in Saturday at midday, all that stuff. It's been kind of a theme this season. This week, absolutely, it's different.
Yeah, because I think, but you know what I think it is? It's because, excuse me, I think we all said it as well at the start of the season, is it will be so, so difficult for Liverpool to win the league again. And I think I was always like, City are going to be the ones to beat. They get defensive problems sorted, and it looks like it's turning out that way. So, and I think Klopp knew as well, having won obviously a major league in his country of birth, is the fact that to win it again is unbelievably difficult. So, I think it's just the fact he's under pressure. He's some of the questions he asked the field, you can understand why they're asked some of them, and you just think generally tries to kind of bat them away and come up with something in German that we all think, whoa, what a fantastic explanation that is. He's probably at his wit's end at the moment, because Saturday will be a great thing about that, example about that, insofar as they were cruising in that game. They really were cruising. We hardly saw Leicester as an attacking outfit at all, made relatively few chances. Liverpool were playing really well, passing the ball well, having chances, etc., and scored, obviously, an outstanding goal through Salah. And basically, they should have gone on and won that 3-0. And if they were playing well and no one was having an issue at the moment in terms of confidence, they would have won it.
Yeah, when it rains, it pours. Mark, always great to have you on. Thanks so much.
Pleasure.
Cheers. That's Mark Lawrenson with us. Football and Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, you can visit gamblingcare.ie. We'll have Pat Nevin with us, by the way, after 9 o'clock. I know there was more than Liverpool at the weekend to discuss. We'll do that with Pat after 9. And of course, there is West Ham, Sheffield United, Chelsea, Newcastle on this evening as well.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Hello, you're welcome along to the football show. So the a few different bits and bobs going on. Some bad news for you right at the top. John Egan has injured himself for Sheffield United this evening. It's his left foot. It was an innocuous enough collision, but he was stretchered off. He was in immediate distress. And according to Chris Wilder now, he's leaving the ground on crutches. So not ideal. John Egan leaving the ground on crutches. Innocuous collision, left foot, stretchered off. And obviously, given Shane Duffy's form, We were kind of hoping John Egan would be around for the 24th of March against Serbia as the World Cup qualifiers start in Serbia. So we'll have to see. Obviously, there is Kieran Clarke in very good form. But if Shane Duffy was turning up to international duty, not feeling great, then you kind of want John Egan there. Obviously, Luxembourg is the other game in that opening doubleheader. We'll see. Early days and it might be nothing too serious. Pat Nevin, good evening.
Good evening. How are you doing? I watched that challenge you're talking about, John Egan, there, and didn't look much in it, did it? It really was kind of hard to see where the damage was, but it must have hyperextended in some way when he went down. And it was a horrible-looking stretcher off. Well, is it a stretcher? Was that a gurney? They stuck him in the back of a vehicle sort of thing and took him off. Let's hope it's not a big thing, because you're right. You need all your best players for the Euros.
Plenty going on. Have you been watching Chelsea this evening? They are 2-0 up at halftime against Newcastle.
I have been, and I am currently watching it. And, you know, Chelsea, it's interesting. They started really quite dull at the start. But they've got better as the game has gone on. And a few stories there. Kepa Arrizabalaga starting. He's not had much to do. But Timo Werner, never short of a story. And a goal tonight from Timo. Stunning. Timo scored, and he also made the other one as well. And he could have had two other goals. And it's as that classic, it's the oldest cliche in the book. You need one that's a complete fluke. This one was a total mishit. It went in, floodgates could open.
Tuchel very, very quickly has arrived and put a stamp on the team, a shape on the team from day one, which he has persevered with and seems to be working very well. I mean, I remember towards the end of the Lampard era, was it long enough to call it an era? We'll call it an era. We were talking about Chelsea saying, well, how do you make all the pieces of this jigsaw fit? And Lampard's trying different things. And I guess Tuchel, quality coach that he is, arrives up and says, yeah, three at the back. I've got Hudson-Odoi. I've got Reece James. I'll bring back Alonso. I've got Chilwell. I've got my two boys in the middle. I've got Mount. I've got Werner. I've got a few options up top. And this is going to work quite nicely. And you think, man, he made that look easy.
Yeah, he has. I mean, it's not been the hardest bunch of fixtures that they've ever had in their lives. So I think we'll find out in a few weeks' time when they've got, I think, United and Liverpool coming up as well, which will make a big difference. But you look at it, it's not dissimilar to style-wise to the stuff that had been done before by Antonio Conte. He did a kind of version of that. It's slightly different, but he'd done a version of it. One or two things have kind of fallen into his lap. He put, what's his name? I can't remember his name. Can't believe it. I'll come back in a minute. who's your favourite little English forward attacker? Mason Mount. Thank you. Got that. Mason Mount in the kind of right midfield attacking role. And his understanding with Cam Hudson-Odoi has been absolutely stunning. But in amongst it all, there's one thing. And I think it is the one thing. Is he's put Kovacic and Jorginho back together again and stuck them in the centre of the park. And they control things. And they hold the ball well. And they're grown-up players who know how to control games. Now, they've had periods in their career with Chelsea when it's not went so well. But them two together are like, honestly, the twins, the way they play together, total understanding, and long periods of just about every game they've played together, they've controlled it. And, you know, there's a lot of things that he's done, but I would say bringing them two together and working together is as big as anything.
And so will Kante get back in?
That's a tough one for him. He's quite a good player, Kante. He will get back in for certain games. But those two have not done anything wrong yet. As we speak, Tuchel's, no one from an opponent's team has scored against Chelsea yet, or Tuchel. And his team, so that's a pretty good run so far. Is it 5.5 games, I think, something like 6.5, whatever, 5.5 games. No one's scored against him yet. Apart from themselves. So, you know, they're covering the front of that centre-back line really well. They're not giving away that many chances, and it looks really comfortable. So, Kante, you know, brilliant, brilliant player. It may well be he has to look elsewhere in the team. Maybe he will come into that position that Mason Mount's playing in, if Mason Mount drops it at all. But at the moment, none of them have kind of dropped it yet, so he has to wait.
So a few things going on. There's some, relatively speaking, breaking news in the last couple of hours on the James McLean front. He, a couple of days ago, called for an end to anti-Irish abuse. This is something he's been talking about at various points over the last couple of years, and obviously in particular over the last year, there have been many big conversations about discrimination and what's appropriate and what's not appropriate. And McLean posted a couple of days ago and once again reiterated that he did not understand why anti-Irish abuse was deemed more acceptable in his eyes by the authorities than other types of abuse. Since then, as you can imagine, he got a hell of a reaction from certain quarters, and he has posted one of the replies, which included, "Don't make me set your house on fire and burn everyone inside it. Don't make me set your house on fire and burn everyone inside it." Now, that was the fourth in a string of messages sent from the same account, which had other things like FDIRA, F Ireland, and called McLean a stupid ginger blank. Now, he says those messages are water off a duck's back, but the final message about burning his house and everyone in it crossed the line, and his wife, Erin, posted as well. And it's often, you know, a really worthwhile insight when you see the effect it has on family. It's not just a player here. So she said, "There isn't a day that goes by that either one of us doesn't receive a message of some sort, whether it be a threat or else someone telling us to get the F out of England." She said this on Twitter. "There have been at times when we've been out shopping and there are people making remarks towards James in front of the kids, and they don't deserve this. We have been spat at, we have been shouted at, nights out have been ruined by people making remarks towards him. I even remember someone threatened him, saying they were taking a gun with them to a certain match, and I can still remember watching that match in absolute fear on the TV," end quote. So very, very grim. None of it very, very surprising. It's just the latest in a line of abuse that McLean has taken.
It is, and there's absolutely no excuse for the people that are doing it. There's a whole bunch of directions to come at this from. Number one, the anti-Irish thing, that's unacceptable. But as is exactly the same, no different, no worse, no better, no lesser, no more evil than the other stuff that's happened to people because they're black, people because they're gay, people because of whatever, you know, not a Scottish nationalist, whatever it is. There's plenty of it, and it's hitting everyone. And we have to stand up against it as much as we possibly can. The only positive is, you mentioned the fact that it's from, you know, those four from one account. It's still a minority of people doing it, but it's an unacceptable thing. So we're going to get that. And it doesn't matter where you're standing, you get hit by it by social media. The point I would make is, footballers finally have got a voice that is now worth something. You know, and they weren't worth, like, nobody was worth anything on social media before, but they are now. So the fact that you're getting this from, you know, all the players, be it the anti-racist and stuff, or the anti-Irish, or the anti-whatever it is, and I actually think they're scared now. I think Twitter's scared. I think Facebook are scared. I think they now know that the football actually is just about turning on them. And football is turning on them. I've just seen a letter sent out by the PFA, the FA, all the organisations over here saying that they do not accept now the abuse that's been rent towards the professional footballers. They're not accepting it anymore. And that's everyone's got together now. And the obviously they're a wee bit slower behind the players who started it quite early on social media. We're kind of getting to somewhere now. Now, it's horrible when you're in the middle of it, and I've been in the middle of it myself. And like James, I'm the same. Water off a duck's back to me, but when the family's brought into it, however much it's likely to be some idiot warrior, 12-year-old or whatever, in his attic, you know, however much it is, it doesn't matter. When it's aimed at family, it's even more unacceptable than it is. But I think we're close now. I think the societies need to understand there's this kind of delicate position between freedom of speech, right, which we know there's no such thing as freedom when you're delivering hate, but also the fact that you should be able to, you know, go online and not have to show who you are. Well, I'm not sure of that anymore. But people who talk about, you know, we actually have to have freedom to be able to exist the way we want, say you should be able to do that. And of course, if you use data in the wrong way, it's a complicated subject. I actually think now with Twitter, I keep on saying Twitter, there are other ones out there. They've got to find out who's posting that. They've got to have, to go on there, if you're part of their gang, you need to be able to be tracked down. And if you're able to track down, that won't be harmed to James, and it won't be harmed to all these other players as well.
I think the anonymity point is key.
Yeah, it is. But I do know the other side of the argument. I know the other side of the argument really well. If you take the anonymity away from people who are posting in these sites, they will say to you, "Ah, well, you can follow me. You know what I'm doing. You know, conspiracy theorists are not difficult to find these days." And they will say, you know, big companies will get their data and use it for various reasons. And then you're talking about the state watching over you. No, these are companies. Twitter is a company. It's a public, it's a private company, right? So it's not as if it's a right to you to be on it. You've not got a right to be on Twitter or Facebook or anything. You can be on it if you abide by the rules. Now, in actual fact, if the rules are you have to sign up to us and, you know, trust us that we're going to take care of that data, if you don't do that, they're not going. So it's nothing about freedoms. You're not stopping anyone's freedoms there at all. It's a company, and you can manipulate the rules as much as you like. And because of the abuse of it, so many people, you know, we've all had it. I'm sure you've had it as well. I've had plenty of it. I laugh my head off at it most of the time. I find it quite funny because it's just you're thinking I'm winding you a lot up, and you're actually getting upset. But in actual fact, it's not. I'm not saying it's easy to do it, but eventually, as time goes by, we're in the early years of, you know, the social media phenomenon. It still is the early years. By the mid years of this phenomenon, they'll need to figure that out, because people will just say, "Get lost, I'm not taking part in your platform anymore," and then they die because all they care about money is money.
A brief tangent, out of interest. I've never spent any considerable time in the UK, but I think most Irish people are well versed in the traditions of anti-Irish sentiment over in England. Was there an anti-Scottish vibe? Like, are there jokes about how the Scots are dumb and stupid and all that kind of stuff the way there were with the Irish? Or did you guys generally, you know, we're all part of the union here, come on down?
I would say it's getting trickier now than it ever was in the past. I mean, I called them anti-Scottish git when I went to London, fair enough. Just shrugged my shoulders and went, "I can give abuse back if you want me to." I just laughed at them. If it was done in the right spirit, I actually didn't mind it. Bias, bigotry, you know, discrimination against Scots, no, I wasn't seeing it greatly by the time I came down. It was certainly a case, you know, the generation before towards Irish. It definitely was. I mean, we all remember the no dogs, no blacks, no Irish. Mm. And that was the thing that was London. My dad is of that generation. You know, they came over from Ireland and had to put up with that. That was in Britain. That's not England. That was in Britain. That was throughout Britain. For the Scots, wasn't big, but there's a difficulty now because there's such a big deal made about the nationalism in Scotland now. That's got the backup of a lot of people down south. But on the other hand, looking up, hearing some of the stuff you're getting from the more extreme nationalists in Scotland, they're not covering themselves in glory, to be honest. So, you know, there's bigotry everywhere. Nationalism's not a pleasant thing 99% of the time, I think.
Mm. We've had Mark Lawrence on the show earlier on, and he's covered the Liverpool game in a bit of depth. What caught your eye over the weekend? What do you want to talk about?
A variety of things. I was desperate to see Everton because there was the chance. How many chances have they had to get there? And I was at the game the other night, the 5-4 game. It was brilliant. It was absolutely brilliant. It was buzzing after it. It was by the time I got back home, it was 4 in the morning, and it was minus 11 and a half, right? I didn't care because I was still buzzing for this game. It was 5-4. It was brilliant. It was end-to-end. It was a hockey score, much to the dismay of Jose Mourinho. He used to say he didn't do hockey scores. And I loved it. But at the end of that game, I was looking at Everton thinking, "You blew it." You absolutely killed yourself on that one. You have nothing left. There's people that are Charleston couldn't walk. I'm thinking, who have you got it? Oh, it's only Fulham. Even so, no chance. They were never coming back for that. And I felt a wee bit sorry for them, because any time some of the teams put any sort of run together, you know, Everton were the latest ones, it just kind of falls apart because they haven't got depth of squad. You'd have expected more from Man United, because, you know, playing against West Brom, you're thinking, well, wait a minute, it should be enough. It doesn't matter how many games, you've got enough players. But, you know, not to get 3 points out of that one's that's a massive dip. That's a gigantic dip for them. But Diangue, how you say his name, he was astonishing. And I don't know how many listeners have gone and looked him up to see his whole career, right? He's 29. And he's looked great since he's pulled on a West Brom strip. And yes, he's been at Juventus and never got a game there. But he's managed to get to 29, and he's obviously a talented guy, and he's also a big physique and everything. He's not managed 200 league games yet. You're thinking, what? Who did you manage that? To manage to get Premier League at 29 years of age, if not managed to string together. And by the way, half of them are in China and places like that, in the lower echelons of Turkish football. So it's extraordinary. But I'm sure he's made an absolute mint going to China and doing those sort of things. But he does actually look as if he could make a bit of a difference for them. And that's good news for West Brom. So I'm kind of happy for them. I suppose the other thing is, I don't know if you watched the game today with West Ham United. The West Ham thing was that was interesting to watch, because, as you know, big fan of David Moyes and get enough abuse about it. But it's looking brilliant. They really have got it nailed. And each time he brings in players, and he's, you know, you're bringing in players, you think, are they necessarily going to work? He's worked them together incredibly well. So yes, I'm impressed with what David Moyes did. Very unimpressed with Sheffield United. Again, if anybody watched it tonight, that looked like a team who, considering how much effort they put in and how much they're all about effort, honestly, they look, I'm not going to say they chucked it, but the soul, the heart and the soul just was not there in that team tonight, and you'd kind of worry about them. So, you know, it's hard to talk about anything other than the top teams most of the time, but I like to mention them now and again. The Liverpool thing was astonishing, wasn't it? Absolutely astonishing to be one up and then the complete capitulation there. And that's, for all the fact that I've always expected a sort of dip, this is an incredible dip of for their team, and it's, you go so far as to say they're out of it now. They're not going to win the league, which is astonishing considering what you thought 2 months ago.
Mm. Jurgen Klopp said as much, we are out of it. I mean, last 10 games, they're 15th in the table, 3 defeats in a row. The goals they conceded are just horrific. We went through them with Mark Lawrence, and I mean, they're so bad. On Manchester United and West Brom. So West Brom figured out something which probably isn't a state secret here. Swing a few crosses in and De Gea will stay in his line and we can have a go at them. And then if we just keep a very, very close eye on Bruno, we should be okay. And even Bruno manages to score a brilliant volley in the midst of it all. But we'll be largely okay. And United were stodgy and slow and just feel a million miles away again, really, too often.
It happens every now and again. They have a period and they fall down again. To be honest, when Man United are playing in a certain way against certain teams that don't really allow you to break in them, and to be honest, Sam's not stupid. They make sure that they're not easy to break on. I mean, their whole team won't go and attack at the same time. They ain't Leeds United by any stretch of their imagination. So when they've not got that option, that's a big, big difference to them, particularly playing away from home, because United's numbers have been pretty good away from home, and very good away from home this season. But if you're playing away from home against a team that won't come out, it's kind of the run up kind of blind alley slightly now and again, and that certainly was the case in that one. And of course, they could have even lost the game at the end. They weren't far away from losing the game at the end. So, you know, you look at that and the fact that, you know, it was odd watching. We're talking about the Everton Spurs game. And Spurs put a lot of effort into that as well, and they got beat, so they were going to be stuffed by that one. So they have to go and play City. Has to be said, that was an extraordinary one to watch, because for a team that Spurs, even though they would be a little bit tired after the midweek game, they looked sharp up front and you really need lightning players and scoring a lot of goals, making a lot of chances. We're probably the better team, you know, player for player against Everton, even though they lost 5-4. Playing against City, they look lumping. That's the only word I could explain, lumping. They just couldn't move. They were like, you know, big ogres trying to get around the park in comparison to these nippy players just zipping in amongst them. Yeah, I thought that was an extraordinary display by City to just demolish them. And that's a team that have thoughts of getting in the top four. And they were absolutely, I thought they were torched.
They were. They've gone from first to eighth, Spurs, in the time that Man City have gone from 13th to first, obviously, since November. You know, there was a moment in that game where Harry Kane took a free kick and hit the post, and it was just such a good free kick, and you think to yourself, this guy is such an all-rounder, you know. And I hadn't realized, I was just doing a bit of reading earlier, and he was playing midfield at times in the Spurs Academy. You know, you can see he's such an all-round player, the way he can play these passes for Son from deep. 27 years old, Pat. He's on a very tidy 10 million a year at Spurs. I think we'd both accept 10 million a year. And just looking at his goals, so in 17, he played 30 matches, 29 goals, insane in the Premier League. In 18, he played 37 matches, basically every game, 30 goals, unbelievably good. 19, it's been 17 goals in 28 matches. And last year, 29 matches, 18 goals. And this year, he's on 21 matches, 13 goals. My point is, his ratios are incredible. He's a complete all-rounder. He's 27. It's now or never for Kane. Isn't it? Like, you know, as you said, Spurs were torched, and really, where are they going in the next 3-4 years, realistically? If you're Harry Kane, I mean, I understand the pull of staying, but it's the next 3-5 years where you can probably treble your money and win trophies, or you can stay and be a hero forever at Spurs and welcomed back as a legend every time you go back to the stadium. That's the dilemma facing him. What's your sense on Kane?
Right. First of all, he leaves tomorrow afternoon, he comes back a legend for the rest of your life anyway. So that's not even a beginner. It's like the starter. It's what type of person is. If it absolutely affects him, that he feels that's a honesty and loyalty and all that sort of stuff. The one I would think about is Shearer, Alan Shearer. You know, he had a great career, didn't he? And yes, he had the championships at Blackburn. But in reality, he didn't make the expected moves, did he? He didn't go to Manchester United when it was expected. You know, the big one he could have made that could have really topped off the career, he made the kind of move for love sometime in Newcastle United. And you think, Harry, this is it. I agree, this is it. I have to say, I'll have to be honest, it's nothing against Spurs, but I'd be off. This time, I think I'd be off now, because you've done enough, mate. You've shown that you're world-class, not only as a striker, but as a 10, you know, as any other position. Watching Spurs play, when he plays, and I've been at quite a few of the games that season, it's just, when he's not on the pitch, it's like you don't recognise the rest of the team as the same group of players, because everybody moves in a different way when he's on the pitch. So you talk about his numbers of goals, they're great. Then you talk about his assists, and they're absolutely fantastic as well. But it's even the other stuff, it's much more marginal than that. It's not so obvious. Every other player is a better player when he's actually on the pitch, because he creates space, he moves it, and he also drags players away. So they're not going to catch up with his standard. You know, even Bale, even with Son, who's fantastic, you know, Moura has great moments, etc. The question remains, and I suspect it's your next question, where?
Yeah.
And it's really tough, because I think he would make Man United better. I think he would make Liverpool better. I think he would make Man City better. I think any of those teams. The big question is, I suppose, is do you do Bayern, or you wouldn't do a PSG, you wouldn't think, would it be Real or would it be Barca? But have a look what happened to Eden Hazard when he goes over there. He disappeared without trace, you know, on the most difficult times ever for those clubs. So, not that you should ever listen to a word I say. I would be looking at one of the other very, very big clubs and maybe trying that one.
It's going to be really interesting to see what he does. By the way, we saw a glimpse of Gareth Bale jinking by some players. That was a collector's item thus far this season.
Yeah. Well, consider the numbers again, you know, and it was great because it was a wee world-class moment, but it was a very wee world-class moment. And again, he didn't even make the squad. He didn't make the squad. I think he decided he wasn't making the squad. For the game against Everton in the Cup. Mourinho was clearly quietly furious about that. And it is that classic one. I remember I used to play with a player. You may not remember his name. He played in the Champions League final with Sampdoria. It was Ivano Benetti. Played over in the UK for a while as well. Became great mates of mine near the end of my career at Tranmere Rovers. And him and I weren't... John Aldridge wasn't... best pleased with him and I. And we both get injured at the same time. And we both get exactly the same injury, plantar fasciitis. You've no idea where I'm going here with this, have you? I'll get there, don't worry. We both had the same injury. Anyway, I come back after 2 weeks. And Ivano came back after, I think, 6 or 7. No more pain, no less pain. Just how you looked at injuries, how you looked at your willingness to go through things, your capabilities of going through things, and your willingness to take a chance for your body, not only for that moment, but for the rest of your career. And it feels like that with Gareth, doesn't it? You know, see, you've not got that long left in your career now. The last number of years have kind of been wasted a wee bit.
Yeah.
Is it worth having a go, mate? Just wrap it up. Take a, you know, they don't like you saying it in modern days, but, you know, take a painkiller and just go on with it, you know, and grit your teeth. And you just feel that some managers look at certain players and think, I don't think you'll do it. I don't think you're willing to do it. Whereas I've got other guys out there who really ought not to be on the pitch, but they are so desperate to do it. And I think that's where he is just now. He just needs to make a decision. Who am I as a player? Am I going to walk out this career? I'm an incredibly wealthy guy who's done very well, particularly international level and for a period, but has actually walked out having massively underachieved in the second part of his career here, which would be a real sadness because he's still got the brilliance there.
Yeah, I think it's looking ominous. I think we're done. I think we can. I'm happy to be proved wrong, but it's not looking good. One last tiny point, by the way, to throw at you. There was a lovely little bit of insight on Match of the Day in light of Man City's players being unable to take good penalties without Aguero and De Bruyne. And Alan Shearer and Lineker were there, both take penalties. And it was they both gave their own little way of doing things. So Shearer would decide a few days before the game what side he was sticking the penalty, what type of penalty he was taking. And he would practice with goalkeeper and he would tell the goalkeeper where he was going. Now, the goalkeeper wasn't allowed to cheat, but, you know, this is where I'm going. Don't take the mick. Don't dive before I even kick the ball. But that's what's happening. And Lineker also decided a few days in advance what he was doing with the penalty. But he would practice without a goalkeeper because he didn't want to have the confidence-shattering images of goalkeeper repeatedly saving his penalty. And thought it was interesting. They decided a couple of days in advance. Like, I've talked to Matt Letizia before, and he would always, from his point of view, go right corner, you know, open out his body. And last second, if he saw the keeper going that way, it was very easy for him to turn the ball into the left corner from his point of view.
Do you know, that's would surprise you, because if anyone have ever seen me taking a penalty, almost certainly I've seen the worst penalty I've ever seen.
Pat, we get a tweet in every night by someone going, have you ever asked Pat about that penalty? We have.
Yes, we have. Right. So people know that. What they probably don't know is, at the age of 11, I was a Scottish champion penalty taker, right? So I took penalties in the cup final at halftime at Hampden Park, Celtic against Airdrie, 75,000 people. And I scored 15 out of 15 against a professional keeper. I was better at 11 than I was as a professional. And I should have remembered what I thought then. And the thought was then, hit it with a relatively decent amount of power and make sure you hit the side net. And that was it. Very much like Lineker, I think. You know where you want to put it. It doesn't, I mean, if you're taking 15 penalties, you can't think about 15 of them that far ahead. But if you put a penalty with good pace, not smashed because it's hard to smash into a side netting, but good pace and hit the side netting, you will score. And if you don't take the smash penalty, the Shearer one, which is massive power, which is dangerous in itself because it's hard to get good direction in that. But some people like Shearer are good at it. In the modern game, if you decide to go to the goalkeeper's right and you don't hit the side netting, he'll save it these days. That's just what will happen. He will save the penalty kick. He will get there. And I would say 70, 80% of the time he will save it unless you hit the side netting. That's how improved goalkeepers are. That's how tall they are. That's the reach they've got. So unique. There's a million different ways of doing it. The Lineker and the Shearer one, to be honest, see if you look at the modern game, because the keepers have changed and because they get bigger and they cover so much more area, and probably a lot of them are a bit more agile as well, that's why you get these weird ones. That's why you get the Jorginho ones. That's why you get Bruno Fernandes ones, because they need to think out of the box, because you think of that corner all week and then you put it but you don't quite get it into the side netting. Well, it doesn't matter how long you've thought about it, he's not going to save it. He's going to save it. So I like their thinking, but oddly enough, it's one area I think the game has kind of moved on.
Interesting. Listen, pleasure. We'll talk next week.
look forward to it. Still 2-0 here. Nothing much happening in this second half. Just waiting for me to go back up and watch the rest of it.
Good man. Pat Nevin, great to have you with us. Text in says Harry Kane needs to have a chat with Sheringham. Ask him if he thinks the move to win trophies was worth it. Yeah, I suspect Eddie's quite happy he made that move ultimately. Football coverage on Off the Ball is with thanks to Paddy Power. For information on responsible gambling, visit gamblingcare.ie. Now, Brian Kerr was on co-commentary for us yesterday. We're going to bring you some Brian Kerr.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
15 minutes to go between Chelsea and Newcastle. Still Chelsea 2-0 up. As for Manchester United, we touched on it there with Pat Nevin. Really, at this stage, they should be more worried about maintaining second spot than worrying about Man City above them. They are 7 points behind Manchester City, and City have a game in hand. So I think we can call that 10 points, given City's form at the moment. We had the West Brom United game yesterday, 1-1 draw. It was Stephen Doyle and Brian Kerr on commentary, and they had a chat afterwards.
Well, Brian, it was 1-1 at the Hawthorns between West Brom and Manchester United. We might go into what that means for both sides, but it was a really entertaining match considering it was a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, the difficult conditions today, Stephen. It was very, very windy in the second half, some torrential rain. I think the conditions did affect the match. Manchester United aren't as fluid as you would expect them to be. West Brom dug in, obviously helped by that early goal, and a good goal it was. Good ball in from Gallagher, good header by Degney. And they gave Manchester United plenty of trouble right through the game. And while United dominated the match in possession, West Brom were always a bit of a threat when they did get forward. I wouldn't say it was particularly counter-attack stuff. It was more build-up down the flanks and any ball that went into the box. Degney was a real... He was a physical handful, I would think, from Maguire and Lindelof. It's the best way to describe it. I felt they deserved their draw.
Yeah, and perhaps Sam Allardyce, their manager, might be thinking they could have got the win, because you'd have to say in the balance of play, the first half they were probably the better side, and then Diagne had those two brilliant chances in the second half. I'd say they're regretting maybe not putting one of those away and getting all 3 points.
Well, you know you're not going to get a huge number of chances when they're in the position they're in. They haven't scored an awful lot of goals, just 7 home league goals this season. They conceded an awful lot, 31. So you're playing at Manchester United, you're second bottom of the league. They've only got 12 points, and they've only had one win since Sam came in. You're not expecting to get loads of chances. You're defending deep for a lot of the match. You're hoping to get on the counter that you get something, and you might get some set pieces. And that's how it worked out. Get off to a great start, push players forward into the attack. Good ball in from Gallagher, and he out-muscled Lindelof to score. And as a manager, I'm sure he was hoping that might be enough. But given the defensive problems they've had, He said that many times, we just can't keep goals out. I got clean sheets. We weren't able to get a clean sheet again today. Took a great goal to break them down. Brilliant finish by Fernandes. But so there will be annoyance and frustration for West Brom that they had clear-cut chances in the second half of the match and probably could have won the game had they got that lead goal.
Is survival too much to ask for that West Brom team now?
I think so. 12 points, 24 games in now, 14 games to play, 42 points to play for. I can't see it. You know, they're going to need to get, if you say to get to 36 points, they need 23 from where they are now. I think it's going to be very difficult for them to do anything like that. But look, they showed resilience today, good organisation, and a bit of a threat when they did get forward. So there's a little bit of hope there, but I just think they're too far off. I mean, the fourth bottom team is Newcastle. They're 9 points behind Newcastle after today's game, after their game today, West Brom's game. And Burnley are in very good form, Brighton are in good form. I think the likes of Palace are too far ahead. They're on 29 points already. So I can't see it. I think the bottom three at the moment will be the bottom three when it comes to the end of the season.
Which would be huge, because Sam Allardyce has never been relegated before. But to ask you about Allardyce and his decisions at the back before we move on to United, young Darragh O'Shea, who we mentioned in the commentary, Brian, he's been really good for West Brom this season. And to think back, games against Manchester City away at Anfield against Liverpool. You could argue he was their best defender on both those nights when they got good results. But he now seems to be kind of cast aside by Sam Allardyce. Maybe he wants experience in there for the relegation battle and thinks that might be a little bit too much for O'Shea. But as a young player like Darragh O'Shea, what does he do now? How does he try and get
himself? Well, he hangs in. He's got an awful lot of games. He's got a lot of game time in both the Championship last season, the Premier League this season. What is he, 19? 20 now. So, you know, we don't have young Irish players playing the Premier League of any age on a regular basis. He's one that's got a lot of game time this season. He waits on his opportunity. He works hard in training. I didn't think he had a good game against Sheffield United. He was involved. He was involved on both the goals, if I remember correctly. Billy Sharp's winning goal. He was there and thereabouts. But he was playing. Sam Allardyce was using three centre backs at that time. Now he's changed back to a back four. O'Shea's out with the team. Peltier's come in at right back. He's been used right across the back line, which is a big advantage for him, big learning experience for him to play in all those positions. I think he's a lot of potential. He's generally very calm on the ball, and he uses the ball well as a defender. So I think it's he's out with the team at present. He's been playing a struggling team all year that's been getting battered. And anyone playing in that defence, what I said before, they've conceded maybe 54 goals before today. You know, there's going to be changes. The manager's never going to be happy with that. If you're the youngest in it, you're also the likely one to be kind of some of the defensive lapses are pinned on you. Mm. But you just have to get on with that experience. I think he has great potential for the future.
Looking at Manchester United, Brian, they were really saved, I suppose, by the brilliance of Bruno Fernandes once more. A brilliant goal from him just at the end of the first half, a half in which United didn't really get off. You know, as you said, they didn't find their rhythm in that half during the commentary. What do you put that down to?
Well, you mentioned the game at West Ham during the week and going to extra time and so on. I think that's a fair case. A lot of the players played in the match, even though they made starting changes today. I think the conditions weren't great. But you're also playing against an opposition who are digging in and playing with resilience, get off to a good start and get a goal. You know, Manchester United at their best in the first half in lots of matches. They played much better in the second half of games, and they've rescued seven matches where they were behind in the first half of games. So they're hoping to do that again today, but didn't go for them other than that brilliant goal. They almost won it at the end with Harry Maguire, brilliant header, rattled the post. I think Johnson got a little bit of a touch. Had a couple of chances in the second half. McTominay shot off the line by Furlong, the sub, and Johnson save with his feet when Greenwood come on, good strike, but not too many. It was hard to create too many clear-cut chances when West Brom were as deep as they were, and also had a little bit between their teeth because they weren't behind in the match. But it wasn't one of Manchester United's better games. Cavani didn't get a chance today. Martial didn't play particularly well. Rashford did okay. Greenwood, impressive, I thought, when he come on. But they just were a little bit off it today, Manchester United. And certainly the centre-backs didn't cover themselves in glory by any means as defenders. They did all right in the ball. And Maguire was one of their better attackers, raiding from the left side at times, like an inside left, an old-fashioned inside left, and was involved in the goal and setting up short to cut the ball back for Fernandes' brilliant volley.
What does he do about the centre-halves, Brian? Because they spent £80 million on Harry Maguire. He's the club captain. They can't really cast him aside. Lindelof seems to get an awful lot of blame maybe for mistakes that Maguire makes. So he's kind of got himself into a bit of a corner here, I think, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Does he need to invest in centre-backs?
I think they'd be reluctant to go again. They've got Bailly there. He seems to be a bit injury-prone. He was very impressive when he played in a couple of games. He hasn't played in a lot of games over the last few years on a consistent basis. Hadn't had a consistent run in the team. Does he go again? They've had others there. Rocco is another one. Jones is out, injured list, not really featured. And Rocco, I think they've got him out now.
They've gone back to
Argentina. So they've tried a few people. I mean, look, at Lindelof and Maguire have been a reasonably good pairing, I'd say, this season. They're often left isolated against teams who United are kind of battered and chasing the goal. Shaw and Wan-Bissaka are up the pitch and they're left alone at the back and not a lot of protection midfield if Matic doesn't play. And even if Matic plays, he's not got great legs. McTominay was anxious to get forward today in the middle, so was Fred. But, you know, it's more of the 1v1 stuff that you look critically at them. And Maguire made bad mistakes today that, you know, De Gea rescued him in the second half with a double save. And Lindelof got done on the goal. And they've just got to be better in that situation. To go off and look for another centre-half, not easy to get one. We see Liverpool kind of going into the, certainly the middle to low-range market to try and rescue their situation. And the young lad played yesterday, didn't really look the part, looked out of his depth in his first match. Davies didn't even make the bench, the lad he signed from Preston. It's all right saying, get you know, Van Dijk, but they're a bit scarce. Upamecano may be available. It doesn't look like Manchester United are going to be in the market. It looks at the moment that he's going to go to Munich, although several other clubs want him. It's hard to get that one. Those top-class guys that can play almost on their own at the back, that can play as a 1v1 defender, but also can play out from the back and get a, be the first line of attack in their use of possession. They're scarce, and anyone that has them doesn't want to sell them.
Just to finish then, Brian, 2 points dropped in the Premier League title race. I don't even know if you think there's still a race on, but of course they do have Chelsea and Man City after Newcastle next week. If they were to beat City and to take points off them, and look, as we've seen so many times this season, teams going on a run, then they get a couple of injuries, then the results start to hit the skids. They're still in the race, really, aren't they? Until it gets to maybe double figures.
They just about are. I don't see it. I think Manchester City will get away now. I think Manchester City's blip was at the start of the season when it was understandable. Like Manchester United lost games early on, Crystal Palace, Spurs, Arsenal early on, home games. I think everyone was in a fairly disjointed state at the start of the season because of the shortness of the break, the lack of the pre-season and the damage that the COVID infections were having to the squads and the training and the lack of preparation. In that period, Manchester City lost a couple of games, but they've recovered brilliantly since then. And they look to me, even without De Bruyne, who would be considered the best, possibly the best player in the league, even without him and the centre forward like Aguero, Jesus has started to play in recent games, but even without those two, they've been very, very steady and convincing, and you know, on the most consistent run of anyone this season. And I think they've already got away, and they continue to get away from the pack. I don't see Manchester United catching them, or Leicester, or anyone else for that matter.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
The OTB Podcast Network, with Green Farm on the go. Snack smart with 100% natural, protein-powered chicken bites.